AFA founder Don Wildman was a visionary. He saw the negative influence the movie and TV industries had on society and knew their technology could be used as tools to counteract the evil taking over our culture. That vision is realized in American Family Studios. We're committed to producing feature films, animated series, and documentaries that glorify God by upholding His standards. Find out how AFS can impact your family and friends at AmericanFamilyStudios.net.
Welcome to Today's Issues, offering a Christian response to the issues of the day. Here's your host, Tim Wildman, president of the American Family Association.
Hey, good morning, everybody, and welcome to Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. I'm Tim Wildman with Ed Vitagliano. Good morning, Ed.
Good morning, Tim.
And Fred Jackson.
Hi there, Tim.
And we thank you for listening wherever you may be joining us from along the American Family Radio Network or listening on the app. You may be listening on our AFR app, which is very, very popular now, which travels. You don't have to have a radio signal to download and listen to AFR on the app. So if you don't have it on your phone or your iPad or whatever you use there for your smart device, download the AFR app and you can listen clear as a bell anywhere in the world as long as it has high-speed internet. So take advantage of that. You gentlemen have a good weekend, did you?
Sure did.
Yeah. I did as well.
Yep. Looking forward to the lower temperatures this week. I don't know if you guys noticed in our...
Where we live. It all over the country?
It's getting down even along the Gulf Coast. Down in the 60s overnight.
Wow.
There is, Canada gets blamed in the wintertime for snowstorms.
Yes.
So I want to take credit right now.
Yes.
There is a cold air stream coming down from Canada, coming down as far as the Gulf Coast here. And so we're going to get temperatures in the 60s overnight. And in some up in Nashville, Tennessee, in the 50s.
Wow.
Overnight.
In August.
I don't mind.
No, I don't either.
I don't mind.
It was a very hot weekend. Again, like Tim says, where we live, probably up across much of the country. And what do they call them? The dog days of August? And I don't know where the word came from, the expression came from. But
hey, when 91 is considered a cool break,
yes,
then
that's
know,
the truth.
You know, it's been already a long August, but anyway, so it's 91 where we live here today. But and then I'm looking 88. This is what old people do, right?
Yes.
Sit around Hardee's or McDonald's with a cup of coffee, talk about the weather.
The weather,
especially men. Anyway, it looks like still going to be hot, but not crazy hot. Problem we're having where we live in North Mississippi is we had no rain now.
That's
for for like 2 weeks.
I don't know. Very dusty.
Yes. And things are starting to turn yellow and brown.
Right.
And things of that nature.
Which I'm okay with when it comes to my grass. My opinion is just
the uglier it is, the better you like it.
Let it die.
Yeah.
If it's dead, it's not growing.
Right, which means you don't have to get out and mow it.
No mowing required.
Yeah, when do towns and communities and or states institute burn warnings? Because I've seen that before too. That happened where we live about 5 years ago. I remember that.
Yes, I guess because things get so dry, a stray cinder can ignite a county. So yeah. I don't know what the criteria is.
There's probably some kind of, I'm sure there's some kind of scientific criteria to figure that out, but.
And you and I, if we wanted to look into it, we'd be all over that scientific criteria.
Well, right? I love reading that stuff.
Yeah.
The scientific criteria.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
That and pummeling horse.
Pommel horse.
The pommel horse.
I've gotten so much abuse over a legitimate.
Yeah. Sport.
Sport.
Yeah.
In gymnastics.
Yeah. Right. I know.
The
sorry,
pommel
I'm
horse.
Sorry about that.
I don't think you are, because every Monday I get it.
I apologize.
Doesn't sound like you're sorry. Yes, you apologize, but are you sorry?
Yeah. What? You want to like make me bleed or something here? You want to keep going with this? All right. So anyway, listen, I just noticed here on the news before we get into the news we had prepared to talk about that longtime legendary talk show host Phil Donahue passed away.
Yes.
Yeah, he did. 88, was it?
Mm-hmm.
I think his age. And His wife of 44 years,
Marlo Thomas,
was at his bedside. Yeah, very sad. I think your dad was on a talk show with Phil Donahue one time?
Yes, my dad.
They were great friends.
Yeah.
Didn't go that far.
My dad was on with Phil Donahue. That's right. He was, Don Wildman. And I can't remember if it was once or twice. Now, Phil Donahue was the number one talk show, television talk show in, I say talk show, I mean, he had guests and in live audiences sometimes. Mm-hmm. So it wasn't just like Larry King talk show.
Right.
Necessarily, but he was like number one network for a few years. Anyway, what, back in the 70s and 80s?
Yeah.
And then along came Oprah Winfrey.
Yes.
And she, like, you know, went to a new level.
Right.
Yeah, but she gave away cars. That helped.
You get a car, and you get a car.
Right. Oprah Winfrey, she went, you know, but she came right after Phil Donahue. But, yeah, he married Marlo Thomas, which now we're getting into baby boomer stuff now,
yeah,
because she's the daughter of Danny Thomas.
Yes.
Which was the actor, very popular in the middle part of the 20th century, Danny Thomas. And he also founded the St. Jude's Hospital.
Yes.
They do great work.
Yes. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, absolutely. So you'll still see Marlo Thomas on TV from, you know, with television advertisements trying to raise money for St. Jude's, the cancer treatment hospital for children in Memphis.
Great work.
The Phil Donahue Show ran from 1967 to 1996, just shy of 30 years.
That's right. A long run.
That is a long, and he was a smart guy. Now, he was left as all get out. He was a true, probably classical liberal, but it was a very popular show. He had a great style in terms of keeping his guests engaged. So
nobody adjusted their eyeglasses more than Phil Donahue.
Yes.
You remember that?
Yeah.
That's kind of his signature move. He would adjust them, and he'd walk around the audience with, walk around the audience.
With his microphone?
With his microphone, and then put it in the face of his audience to ask them what they thought about whatever.
Yeah.
So anyway, he was 88 years old. Phil Donahue passes away. That's breaking news today. All right. Fred, something happening. By the way, Phil Donahue started in Chicago.
I was just going to say that.
And speaking of Chicago, things heating up.
In Chicago.
Right, what's happening there?
Well, it is the opening day of the Democratic National Convention in Chicago. And what's going to go on inside the stadium where they're meeting is going to have to compete with what's going on the outside. Our lead story this morning, 6 o'clock, American Family Radio News, said up to 100,000 protesters are expected to be there. There's one researcher who has done some work on this, and 150 extremist groups are represented from this. This guy's name, this investigative research, is Ryan Morrow, and he kind of described for us what the scene is going to be like outside. Here's a clip from Ryan Morrow, cut number one.
This is an alliance of Islamic extremists and communists, Marxists, and anarchists. All these groups, they worked together before, but I haven't seen them quite fuse together like we're seeing right now. And the vast majority of them support Hamas. So what's their agenda? To make the United States essentially not a factor in world affairs. And many of them have advocated or even participated in violence on American soil, economic sabotage, advocating the attacks on police. In many cases, these groups are basically terrorists themselves.
So they're trying to leverage, you know, the media will be there in force, and they're trying to leverage that exposure for their causes. Most of them, Antifa, et cetera, are going to have some element of anti-Israel, pro-Hamas, pro-Palestinian, but also they're there to draw attention to their call for abortion rights, or as the left likes to call it, reproductive rights. And they're also there for other causes as well. So police there are going to have their hands full. Chicago and convention seem to go together with protests through the years. There's quite a history of it. But, you know, another comment this morning from former acting ICE director Tom Holman. He says black churches will also be among the protesters, but they're protesting something else. Giveaways to illegal aliens. Cut number two.
Chicago's a perfect example this administration created. And there's going to be other people protesting, too. I mean, I've talked to several black pastors. There's going to be black churches protesting on what the city of Chicago, the giveaway program to illegal aliens, the free lodging, the free medical care, the free services that the black community isn't getting. So, I'm you know, let's see what happens. But they're on display. What the America they created is on display this week, and I hope all America sees it.
Yeah, that's an interesting comment from Holman. What you're going to see in Chicago this week is a demonstration of what the Democratic Party has created over the last 3.5-4 years with their policies.
Yeah, the fact of the matter is that there was some initial pushback by people like Nancy Pelosi when Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez was elected and started talking in more radical terms. I remember Nancy Pelosi, was famously dismissive of AOC, but that faction in the Democratic Party has grown, and it is becoming very powerful, and they want to run the Democratic Party. It's one thing for you to have an outside the mainstream ideology and have to start a political party from scratch. It's something different entirely if you have a chance to take over an already functioning political party, one of the two main political parties. And that is what's happening. And I don't think these people, especially the one that first clip talked about, these kinds of splinter groups, the Marxists, the Democratic Socialists, if you want to call them that, the anti-Israel, pro-Hamas, all those kinds of groups, they want radical to be the middle name,
yes,
of the Democratic Party. And let me just say that now there have been, I think there was at least one Democratic Party convention in Chicago after 1968. I think Bill Clinton was nominated in 96 in Chicago. But 1968, it wasn't just here, but it was around the world, in Europe at least. 1968 was a pivotal year in the anti-war mm-hmm. Vietnam movement. People were watching the Democratic National Committee convention on television. I remember because I watched those with my dad, and they saw the police, the Chicago police, I mean, in riot gear, cracking heads. Mm-hmm. And that's what Mayor Richard Daley, himself a Democrat, ordered. And they saw the anti-war protesters, and that became what the Democratic Party was kind of known for. So it remains to be seen if that happens at the DNC convention this week. But it sounds like these folks are ramping up.
Well, it's interesting because the Chicago police have been meeting with representatives of these demonstrators, and I think they're only allowing demonstrations up to a mile away from the main meeting point. My guess is if you've got 100,000 demonstrators in that city, they're going to find a way to break through, and because they want to get in where the TV cameras are.
Right.
And I think you're going to see some possibly very violent demonstrations and violence there.
And Tim, this is your show. We'll let you on here in just a second.
No, I'm listening. I'm learning.
It's not just the protesters outside. There is a very radical portion, I believe, of the delegates inside the convention,
yes,
who are going to want this party to turn against Israel.
Yes.
So they may not riot inside the convention, mm-hmm. but they are going to try to push the Democratic Party further left.
Yeah, someone was saying on the weekend, Democrats have a Gaza problem because they're trying to appease a very strong Palestinian component, especially out of Michigan, and you have Somalis in Minneapolis. So you've got that component of the Democratic Party, which they depend on for votes.
Right.
But also they have got to at least publicly come out and say, we support Israel in the wake of October the 7th. The Democrats have said, we will stand by Israel. We will stand by Israel. Well, that has not pleased these Palestinian Somalis and others that are out there. University kids who think Israel is the worst state on the face of the earth.
I expect to hear boos at the convention.
Yeah, you will.
If anything comes out from the platform that's pro-Israel,
yes.
I think you'll hear significant boos from the crowd.
I think you're right.
Well, that's going to create problems. I don't necessarily disagree with you, but I mean, you got Jews, very prominent Jews in the Democrat Party. You got Chuck Schumer. He's a Jew. And they're Debbie Wasserman.
Yeah, Wasserman Schultz.
I mean, she's very prominent in the party. Bill and Hillary Clinton are supporters of Israel.
Right. Hillary Clinton has come out publicly criticizing Hamas, what Hamas
is. She said you can't negotiate with these people.
Right.
She's right on that.
Yeah.
Hillary Clinton, I'm talking.
You know, a lot of folks, we remember 1968 and that period of about four years.
I was just a toddler roaming around. You know?
All right. So some of us don't remember. But the 4 or 5 years after 1968, before we officially came out of the Vietnam War, were very violent in America. A lot of people don't know this. I read 4 or 5 years ago, I wrote a short story about the violence that followed 1968. It wasn't just this convention. According to FBI statistics, in an 18-month period from 1971 to 1972, these radical groups we're talking about, the Weather Underground, Students for Democratic Socialism, I forget the SDS, 2,500 bombs went off in America, five a day in inner cities. And
wow.
A lot of people don't know how violent it got in this country. And it looks like we are kind of entering into another kind of phase where that becomes a possibility. Because of the policies of the radical left and the Biden administration.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, tonight is when President Joe Biden gives his speech Monday night. I think he's going to be introduced by his wife. His wife, Jill Biden, is also speaking. But this will be his last high-profile event before he gives up the presidency in January.
He needs to resign.
Beg pardon?
He needs to go ahead and resign.
Now, you're being serious, aren't you?
No, I'm dead serious. Yeah. He needs to go ahead and resign. He's not doing anything. His power basically has been transferred to Vice President Harris because everybody knows that she's going to be the nominee and that she's, you know, if the Democrats are going to win the presidency, she's going to be the one, not him. He's the lamest of ducks.
Right.
And plus the fact that he's, basically, you know, he's been diminished mentally, that been on display for the world, which is the primary reason why he isn't the candidate anymore, even though he's the incumbent, and shows up basically tied with Trump in all the places. So he was not going to be favored to win. Let's put it that way. Trump was going to be favored to win, but it wasn't like blowout city. That I remember, basically, when you were looking at Biden versus Trump. But the point is, he's going to be speaking tonight, and I think this is going to be, is he just going to get into the, is it going to be bad like it has been?
Well, I don't think Joe Biden wanted to go. Maureen Dowd.
To the convention?
Yeah. No, he didn't want to give up running for a second term.
Oh, I got you.
Yeah, he did not want to give up running for a second term. Maureen Dowd, who is a New York Times liberal columnist, on Friday or Saturday, I think it was, wrote an article, and she used the coup word. This was a coup. Nancy Pelosi, Barack Obama, Chuck Schumer, and a few others basically said, that's it, Joe, you're out. We are going to force it. Plus, they got those coup orchestrators, if you want to call them, they also got the media on their side.
Very quickly. It happened very quickly.
I just noticed it was amazing. The Associated Press was supporting Joe Biden, along came that debate.
Yeah.
which was a disaster, and all his allies turned against him. And I'm not, I, you know, we were talking about this at our story meeting in the newsroom this morning. Could it be that Joe Biden has a few sharp remarks this evening in his speech?
Nah,
I don't think so.
Do you think he's going to go peacefully?
I think he will.
Yeah, I do too.
I think he'll promote Kamala Harris as the nominee. I'm 100% behind her because he picked her. He picked her to be the vice president, vice presidential candidate in 2020. So, in a sense, she's his legacy.
Yeah.
He's going to be supportive.
But think about it. I agree with Ed on that. Think about this for a minute. We're talking about, let's just say, what's today in August? What is today?
19.
Okay, let's just say, so you got September 20th, October. I'm counting months on my fingers.
Yes.
November, December, January. So approximately 5 months from now is when the inauguration day will be for whoever the next president is.
Right.
So basically, if he stays in office, you got 5 months without a president. The leader of the free world.
Right.
The commander-in-chief of America, of our armed forces, CEO of our country. He's going to be non-existent, basically. I mean, I guess he will still maintain the power of the office and he can sign things, but there's going to be no interest on his part for really negotiating deals or handling situation room moments or hours. Do you understand what I'm saying?
Yeah, I think you're exactly right. However, I would say that Kamala Harris will be the de facto president. So, because she's the nominee. And
is she really going to be in the White House doing the daily grind?
Well, I don't know. But I'm saying if somebody wanted to discuss something with the American, with the leadership of our country, okay, I think they would go see Kamala.
If I were her, I'd say, I don't know, I'm not the president. Go see Joe Biden if it's a hard one. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
If it's an easy one, you just field it.
Yeah.
Do the best you can. No cackle. Remember, no cackle. Right.
Okay. But I think she's going to be running the show. It's clear from the media coverage of her. They're treating her almost as if she is the incumbent president.
Right.
Not the incumbent vice president.
Right.
Well, one more thing from the convention. This may not shock people, but I still find it shocking. Planned Parenthood is going to be there at the convention site. They're offering free abortions.
Absolutely wicked. They're full. Their schedule's filled already.
Yes. Their appointments have all been taken up. It's just amazing.
It's kind of someone in our leadership meeting this morning said it's like going to a convention and getting swag, you know, a bag of goodies.
Yeah.
In the minds of the Democrats, the swag you get is a free abortion. Come on in and for free.
Yeah, they're proud of that.
We'll cut up your baby.
They're advertising it. They're proud of it. And this is sort of who we are, the American Democratic Party today. They are the party of abortions with no limits. No limits. Nine months doesn't matter.
Right.
You ask them to put any restrictions on abortion, they'll say, no, you're violating reproductive rights. We'll be back momentarily. Stay with us.
According to a recent report, Planned Parenthood continues to rake in billions despite dwindling clients. The biggest takeaway here is that Planned Parenthood is generating vast profits, including millions in taxpayer funding. And preborn, that's you and me, are stealing their clientele, meaning the babies they are trying to kill. Preborn operates on a very slim budget as they rescue over 200 babies' lives every day, and they receive no government funding. Preborn's network of clinics are situated in the darkest corners, competing head-to-head with the abortion giants, and they need our help now more than ever. When you donate $28 to Preborn, you will offer a free ultrasound to an expectant mother caught in crisis. Once she hears that heartbeat and sees that precious life, her baby's chance at life doubles. Please sponsor a precious baby's life. Your tax-deductible gift will go directly towards saving babies' lives, so please be generous. You will never regret saving a baby's life. Just dial pound 250 and say the keyword baby. That's pound 250, baby, or go to preborn.com. That's preborn.com.
This is Today's Issues. Email your comments to comments@afr.net. Past broadcasts of Today's Issues are available for listening and viewing in the archive at afr.net. Now, back to more of Today's Issues.
Welcome back to Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. Tim, Ed, and Fred, thank you for listening to AFR. And we were talking about the Democrat National Convention going on in Chicago. Starts tonight, right?
Starts tonight. Speeches from Jill Biden and President Biden.
Just set my, so I can tape those. I don't know if I can watch them live, but I do want to get them on. Joe Biden and Jill Biden. Reckon what time they might come on, Fred?
Probably 7 to 9.
7 to 9, I'll record.
Central seven time. That's 7 to 9.
I'll record that time slot, see what happens. Is Michelle Obama speaking tonight, too?
I'm not sure. Her husband, Barack Obama, tomorrow night.
Type in Michelle Obama speaking, Ed, and see what pops up there.
Speeches at DNC. See if we can get a schedule. Let me say schedule.
Put a schedule.
See if we can get a... here's what to know, CBO lineup, who's speaking and what to expect. So Monday is for the people. That's the theme. Joe Biden, Dr. Jill Biden, former Secretary of State Hillary Clinton, and a welcome from Chicago Mayor Brandon Johnson. Tuesday, a bold vision for America's future. Whatever that.
All right.
Whatever.
So who's on tap that night?
Former President Obama, uh-huh, plus second gentleman, Doug Emhoff.
Doug's going to speak.
Yeah. Good okay. old Doug.
Yeah.
With a welcome from Illinois Governor J.B. Pritzker. Wednesday, yeah, a fight for our freedoms. Okay. Vice presidential nominee Tim Walz. You taking all this down?
I am. I'm writing notes.
Preceded by former President Clinton, Speaker Emerita Nancy Pelosi, and Transportation Secretary Pete Buttigieg, that is per CNN. And Thursday, for our future, Harris our accepts future. The convention's nomination for president.
Mm-hmm.
Other speakers include Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer, House mm-hmm. Democratic Leader Hakeem Jeffries.
So you're Jeffries. Telling me Michelle Obama is not speaking?
I am looking at the schedule. I do not see her. Okay, I'm just going to say...
Maybe she's still in the Mediterranean with George Clooney.
Listen, there's still a chance for me to be right about Michelle Obama.
I was wondering if
hang on to that one.
Right, yeah. I'm sorry. One speaker who's not on the official agenda, this is from Axios, but Axios has confirmed, will take the stage on Tuesday, former First Lady Michelle Obama.
There, tomorrow night.
Tomorrow, yeah. Tuesday night, yeah.
Yeah.
So she's not officially on.
It's going to be the surprise.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. There was some rumor floating around this weekend that the Democrats were going to replace Kamala Harris at this late juncture.
Oh, that's,
really?
No. Yeah. Todd Starnes put that out. Among others.
There's zero chance of that. Unless they dump Kamala Harris and pick Michelle Obama. And then I become a genius. I became right.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, we'll see, as they say, Ed.
I don't. There's no way they're going to dump Kamala
Listen,
Harris.
Listen, okay, if you just take Michelle Obama and put her up against Donald Trump, she might be favored. I don't know, because the Obama legacy, although conservatives might deny this, the Obama legacy with, I think, a majority of Americans was pretty good.
Yeah.
Okay, so, and she was a very popular first lady, as most first ladies are.
Right.
Okay, they're popular. They're more popular with the American people than their husbands are as president. So That if you just put that in the equation, yeah, I could see why the Democrats maybe would have done that or would have liked to done that. But the problem is people aren't robots. Right. And so Michelle Obama, from all indications, and if you hear people who know her quoted, they say she has no interest in politics, right, or being president. She has a, quote, good life. They're very wealthy.
Yeah.
They hang out with the rich and famous. You know, they do what they want to, go where they want to, and the stress of the presidency is off their shoulders.
And they make speeches whenever they want to. Yeah. People want to hear their opinion.
Why do you want to go back into the White House if you're Michelle Obama?
I don't understand how President Barack Obama served. Now, he did serve 8 years, and that's a great paycheck that they get, but how in the world did he get rich?
No, it's not a great paycheck.
No,
if you read about it, read how much. Okay. Yeah. But read how. Oh, I see what you're saying. You're saying they don't get paid a whole lot.
So how do they get rich?
Oh, book deals, speaking engagements.
Yeah. All legit. Yeah. Okay. You're saying sitting on, they go the legitimate route.
Friends with Hunter Biden.
Friends of Hunter.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't think he has many right now.
No, but in the day.
Listen, all these politicians, Republicans or Democrats, they all get rich.
$400,000 a year.
For to be the president?
The president receives in full for his services in the aggregate amount of $400,000 a year to be paid monthly. And in addition, an expense allowance of $50,000 to assist in defraying expenses relating to or resulting from the discharge of his duties.
College football coaches get $5 million a year. That's kind of a base salary.
But they usually have a better year.
Oh, than the president?
Yes. That's a Babe Ruth quote or something like that.
Okay.
Somebody was asking how much you got paid. You get paid more than the president. And he said, well, I had a better year.
True. I'm just saying $400,000 to be president of the United States, you're not in it for the money.
Right.
Okay. That's and in Washington, D.C., that's probably that area, to live in that area, that's probably about $200,000.
Well, they do get to live in the White House.
And free food.
Yeah. Okay. But I'm just telling you, that's free. I know that sounds like a lot of money to most people, and $400,000 is a lot of money, but it's not a lot of money to make annually to be president of the United States.
Right.
Your average doctor in your town makes that much.
Right.
Probably. So that's, that, and what I'm saying is, oh, I wanted to tell you, I thought of a joke. Bear Bryant, the legendary football coach at the University of Alabama. This is, I can't document this story, but somebody told them. So that's the kind of story it was, but it goes around. Said somebody asked him, some reporter asked Bear Bryant, said, hey, you know, your professor here at the university gets paid paltry compared to you. And you're coaching football, a game for kids. And he goes, well, yeah, but if you can get 70,000 people to come watch a science class, then I'm all for that professor getting paid more.
That's pretty sharp.
By the way, I looked it up. It was Babe Ruth in 1930. Baseball player Babe Ruth signed a contract that paid him $80,000 a year, which was more than President Herbert Hoover made at the time. When asked if he thought he deserved to make more than the president, Ruth is said to have replied, why not? I had a better year than he did.
That's a great quote.
That is.
Great quote. All right, you're listening to Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. Tim, Ed, and Fred. Next story, Fred.
Well, Vice President Kamala Harris is out there. She's given speeches, but she still hasn't had a news conference. She does.
How long has this been?
As 20-some days now, at least. 20-some days.
You mean where she doesn't sit, like, and take field questions for 10 minutes or so from the press? She doesn't do
nada,
that?
Nada.
Why is that?
Well, she doesn't want to be questioned about her past remarks on, like, Medicare, about free medical care for illegal aliens, all of that sort of thing. Because there's a lot of information out there of things that she has said in the past.
29 days.
Well, she's also not been asked questions directly about a speech that she gave on Friday. It was billed as her first policy speech, and it was to deal with her view on what needs to be done to correct the nation's economic problems, because the economy, according to all polls, is big on people's minds these days. Well, she went to North Carolina, I think it was Raleigh, North Carolina, Friday afternoon, and she began to speak about what she's going to do if she becomes president. Number one, economically speaking, she said she's going to do something about those high grocery prices. She believes the grocery chains in this country are getting really rich because they're charging far too much for groceries. She has run into a lot of problems with that, even amongst some in the mainstream media. I want you to play you a montage of how some of the media were responding this weekend, particularly to this idea of controlling food prices. Cut number six.
Anything that smacks of price fixing, you know, that I don't think works.
Is this plan to ban price gouging anything more than a gimmick, Governor?
I think it speaks to Kamala Harris's values.
Seems like totally unworkable, first of all, for the FTC to be deciding like how much Kroger charges for eggs.
Is this just a ploy? Because it sounds kind of like it. But is it really policy? I mean, price gouging?
Well, Catherine Rampell, the Washington Post columnist and NewsHour contributor, said it's impossible to exaggerate how bad this policy is. And I agree with that.
What triggered this? What'd she say?
Well, because grocery prices, depending on what you're talking about, eggs or beef or whatever the case may be, at the very least have gone up 20-21%, some as high as 40% and 50%. Now, those who look at the economy honestly say it's because of policies of the Biden administration, the inflation that they have caused. And so, so the Biden administration, Kamala Harris included, are now saying it's not our fault. The grocery stores are just charging way too much. Here's the problem, and that's why you have some in the mainstream media, because price fixing has been done before. She used the word gouging, all right? Price gouging. That word gouging is usually only used, for instance, if there's a hurricane on the coast and they want to stop gas stations from charging three times as much to people when other gas stations are closed down. But she wants to bring in the government, the FTC, the Federal Trade Commission, to control prices. And people like Preston Brashers at the Heritage Foundation says this simply doesn't work. Cut number five.
It's either a case of demagoguery or economic illiteracy here, because if you want to talk about grocers price gouging, the truth is that they have profit margins of about 2% or less in most cases. You know, this is the sort of thing they've tried in countries like Venezuela and former Soviet Union. And the truth is markets know a lot better about what prices should be than any politician, and certainly Vice President Harris.
So Harris has said, she wants to, did we play this? And I just, did we play Harris saying?
No.
Okay.
No.
Okay. I wasn't.
I was just talking about her speech. I did listen to the whole speech on Friday.
Do we have the clip?
No, we don't.
Okay. I thought Steve said he was, maybe Steve's bringing it in next.
There's another matter of her speaking.
Okay. Well, anyway, she's talking about, first of all, you can't do that. You can try. I think this is more for Harris is more trying to play populist politics, kind of like what Biden did when he said, you know, I'm going to erase all the student loans, basically, in America. I'm going to transfer the student debt people have and give it to the American taxpayer. I'm going to do that so I can get more votes from these people who them and their families get the debt taken off, the student debt. So now he did do that. He did do that despite the fact that he couldn't constitutionally do it. He did do that. Remember he said, the court said, I can't do it, but I'm going to do it anyway.
Right.
Remember that? He said, now, I don't know. That sounds like a threat to our democracy.
Which is what they're always accusing former President Trump of being.
Bingo.
Yeah.
Bingo. But Biden went ahead with that anyway. I don't know where that is in the courts today, if that's been ultimately decided, whether he unilaterally can transfer debt, trillions of dollars of debt.
Well, the Supreme Court said he couldn't, but he said, we're going to work around that in the Education Department.
Yeah. So it's the same type idea with Harris saying, you know, we're going to, prices of food are going up too high. We're going to solve that. We're going to try to fix prices. As I say, I think that's an empty threat, but it does represent an ideology.
Yes, it does.
That is dangerous. That can be will be found in other places in her quote economic policy. Let me say one other thing about her not taking. You notice how I didn't let y'all, I took a breath and went right into my second point.
Right. I noticed.
That's a technique you use to keep talking before you forget what you're going to say.
Yes.
So the reason that Harris has not done a press conference or a sit down interview of any substance one on one with a legitimate journalist who will ask her hard questions in how many days?
29.
Okay, there's two reasons why that's the case. One is, and they're related. One is some people are good at that, like Trump. Some people are terrible at that, like Harris. Now, I don't know whether Trump is still on top of his game. I don't think he is. I've seen him. He's not the same Trump he was 4 or 5 years ago, and that's just because he's aged. He's 78 years old. But he's still pretty good on his feet, I'm talking about, and dealing with reporters. Still pretty good, but at one time he was like, he used all that experience for being on The Apprentice for 10 years and his high-profile status. He was very comfortable doing interviews. And the gaggle line, we all know how he would basically take all comers,
right.
Trump would, with respect to Q&A. For Harris, she's just not any good at it at all. And that's the reason they're keeping her from doing these. And it makes sense politically because if you're basically – tied with Trump now, and your candidate's weakness is live interviews or taking questions from the press, why not shield her from that? And the worst that can happen is you get criticized for shielding her from that, like we're doing now, knowing that for the most part, the liberal media is going to let you get away with that because they're on your team. You know what I'm saying? They want Harris to win too. They don't want to see her damaged by saying something stupid on a national interview and it going viral. Like, I've never been to Europe either. Remember?
Yeah. When asked why she hadn't been down to the border.
Mexico, yeah. And then said, I don't understand your question. And the question from Lester Holt was pretty direct about you haven't been to the Mexican border, even though you're in charge of it. What do you say about that? And she goes, I don't understand your question. I mean, you remember that?
Yeah, I do.
So she's terrible at that. Unless she's – they've also coached her, though – and she doesn't do that cackle. They're coaching. She's listening to her personality, public persona coaching.
Yeah.
Cause she's doing a lot better at not doing the things that annoy people, you know, publicly. So anyway,
but you know what? She's got a problem because she wanted to be president back. What? 2019.
Right. When she ran.
And, you know, there was the questions from in one of the debates. Remember, you had about 8 Democrat candidates at one point who would give, you know, Medicare for all.
Right.
She put up her hand, Medicare for all. She's got this record that she cannot deny. And she's trying to, well, she's been flip-flopping on some things. But from that speech on Friday, the second one that she's catching a lot of flack for, she said, you know, housing prices are out of control, and I don't disagree with that, and most people don't. But here's her solution. If I become president, I'm going to start writing checks for $25,000 for first-time home buyers and to help them get into a house. Well, that's been tried before, too, policies to make housing, to get you into a house to make it cheaper, and it just doesn't work. Fox's Joe Concha talked about that part of her speech this morning. Cut number four.
We are witnessing a major shift in this race. That started on Friday when Kamala Harris, in the words of Donald Trump, quote, went full communist, unquote. I mean, first, she wants to give first-time homeowners $25,000 each to buy a home. Was this person alive in September 2008? Subprime mortgages, bad loans to people who couldn't afford to pay them back. It resulted in the worst collapse of this economy since 1929. And she thinks that's a good idea. I mean, good luck with that, because she must think there's enough stupid people out there. And then she's offering, as you just mentioned, government-run price controls for alleged price gouging by evil food stores like Kroger, for example. If food stores have a profit margin of somewhere between 1% and 2%, the margins are so thin. If this were to come to pass, those businesses would be out of business and you would have food shortages. I mean, they tried it in Venezuela, Argentina.
Well, and the first part there is responding to this $25,000 checks going to first-time buyers. First of all, a little bit more to that. It would only go to certain groups, according to her campaign. But also the fact that this has been tried before, and what happens, $25,000 may get you into a mortgage, but the problem is you can't afford the mortgage payment. You have defaults on mortgages, and banks go ballistic about that. So I've got a more
fundamental problem with that. I understand what you're saying, the ramifications of it, Fred. The fundamental problem is that's unconstitutional. It's un-American. And it's insane. Okay, I just put all those things together. The idea of the federal government handing people $25,000 to go buy a house, huh? I've never. You've heard of this before?
One of the guys we just played, the federal government did try this. Now they
when?
Well, that this would lead to the collapse of the housing market.
Cash?
Well, it wasn't cash. It was. They gave banks loans. I think they underwrote the banks lending money to people who couldn't actually afford the house.
That's what happened.
And that's
what happened in 2008 with the housing crash, and
right?
The Fannie Mae and the Freddie Mac and all that
right.
stuff.
This is a little bit different, but it's still the federal government getting involved. Look, the reason why Kamala Harris is not doing interviews is because voters don't care. Voters don't care that she's hiding from the news media. What they would care about is when she opens her mouth in an interview and says something stupid, like she did when she made this speech, this policy speech. The American economy, we were 330 million people. This economy is huge. You cannot control it top down and still have free markets. The only way you can attempt to do it is what happened in Venezuela, where you start nationalizing, okay? And Kamala Harris is revealing herself to be an out-and-out communist. The only way you can force prices to come down is if the government is running the economy. And the government owns, you go to the grocery store and all there are commie cornflakes produced, mass-produced by the government. This is what the Soviet Union tried.
Yes.
This is a Soviet Union error. Okay? The government produces the food. The government buys up the farmland. The government tells you who's going to work the farms and what you do with the wheat and what you do with the corn, and it goes over here, and the government decides. You cannot tell Kroger that you cannot charge X amount of money for a box of cornflakes. You can't do that because they're buying the cornflakes from Kellogg's, and Kellogg's is charging what they want. And if they don't want to get the money that Kroger can now afford to pay them, they're going to either stop producing cornflakes or they're going to send those cornflakes to another store. And that's why Venezuela has food shortages.
Yes.
Because they tried this top-down approach to the economy.
Good points. Good economic lesson there. You're listening to today's issues, Fred, Tim, and Ed. Let me tell you one other thing about that is that kind of bothers me. I don't think the word communist has the effect it once did. Because I think too many Americans have been dumbed down. I'm talking about of all age categories, but especially like 50 under. You say communism to them, they go, what are you talking about? In other words, they don't remember the Soviet Union.
They think you're talking about welfare. Yeah, we need some extra help.
You say define communist to the average person under 50 in America, I bet they would say, I'm not sure. I've heard about it, but I'm not sure. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
The ideology, the Marxist, you say, well, who's Karl Marx? I don't know. Was he like with Billy Joel? Who did he tour with?
He wasn't Groucho's brother.
It wasn't Groucho. I mean, you know what I'm saying? I think that's a real problem in America today is that for a lot of the younger generation, especially, they don't have anything to compare it to. The world and the economy and the way our way of life has just always sort of been like it has been. And so I think there's a certain segment of Americans who just vote on their emotions.
Well, I heard Kamala Harris making a speech. It was, and I don't know how recent this was. I don't know if it was 3 years ago or 2 years ago or whether it was last week. I don't remember, but I've been listening to a lot of things she said. And she was making a speech and saying, you know what? We all want to come out at the same. We all want the same thing. But you know what? We didn't all start off in the same place. Some people had more advantages than others. And the reason they got way down the road is because of those advantages. And now it's time to give those advantages to everyone. She is talking about equality of outcome.
Yes.
And therefore, right. We need to redistribute the wealth right. of this country to give everyone the same starting point.
She is a communist. I mean, she may not be for, you know, a secret police force to knock on doors, although that's where communism usually ends up, see, yeah. Venezuela. But I'm just saying she's not going to come out and say, hey, who's with me on a secret police force for America? Right. She's not going to say that. But she's the things she's talking about. Furthermore, I don't think she can defend them on a philosophical ideology. I don't think she understands them herself
right.
that much. She just knows it plays well, especially for Democrats, to say, hey, I got more free stuff coming your way.
Yeah, but if you don't have to defend it in an interview,
right, right.
then it's not a problem right. that you can't defend it.
Right. Now, I do think she will have to defend it somewhat in a debate situation.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not sure when the first debate is between Trump
it's
and
in September?
Harris.
September.
Okay, I do think she will have to then. She'll have to articulate it somewhat. We'll be back momentarily with more.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.